Kultursalon, Kulturnisalon. Carola Sakotniks Sendung zu Kreativität, Leadership und Kultur. Herzlich willkommen. Dobar dan. Und in jedem Kultursalon werden 4 Fragen gestellt. Was bedeutet Mut? Was bedeutet Zuversicht? Wie entsteht Vertrauen? Und welche Rolle spielt Zuhören? Es geht jetzt los. And today we're going to speak in English, yes. So, as a short summary, what are the skills of a good leader?
So I think there's a skill here, or you know, for leaders, I think for us all, but, you know, for leaders, is asking the good questions, you know, activating the conversation. We all listen, and then we contribute. We see what we've got, and then we decide if we look at the purpose or where we want to go, you know, which one fits best.
Welcome to a Kultursalon in English. It's about leadership, it's about international developments today. And my guest is John Ireland. He is a leadership coach, he's a consultant. He does trainings and he's working with different people in organizations and companies. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you.
It's so interesting that whenever we speak, there's a lot about philosophical exchange on this topic of leadership, mm-hmm. which I appreciate a lot, mm-hmm. and this is why I'm happy that you're here now to exchange with me today. Of course, we're also having, just to have this good start and the usual start, we're drinking something and we're sharing a glass of wine together. Okay. It's a wine made by a lady. It's Sigrid Sorga. She is from southeast of Styria. She's a mother of two or three, I'm not so sure, in her early 40s, and her Gelba Muscatella we're drinking right now is, I would say, excellent. How do you judge this wine? How do you like it?
Very tasty. Very tasty. Thank you.
It's good. So yeah. Let's have a nice sound to that. To Sigrid Sorge and her Gelba Muscatella.
Thank you, Sigrid.
Leadership is something you need to cultivate. Same with wine. It's amazing how more and more ladies are going really into the wine business and how they are cultivating something that needs so much of cultivation. And this is why I like to introduce wine always with a talk on leadership, because it's so similar on certain steps of the process, actually. So you know my podcast, and I usually ask questions just to start off, and then we go and see how the talk develops, actually. It's the podcast on creativity, leadership, and culture, and it's a lot about daring to think differently, daring to lead differently, and I have a lot of words in there that are about trusting, about being kind, about being sustainably delivering good results, which implies a lot, being knowing how the working system, the operating system of us humans works. And you originally are a psychologist, so what do you think is the best to develop a sustainable culture that develops kind of constantly, if that's possible, good results for a prospering company?
Good. You were saying daring to think and live differently, and I was reflecting upon this, and as I say before, all I can offer in this podcast is my perspective, you know, based on my experiences. I think it's the desire and want to think and live differently. And when I say desire and want, then there's the first step of there's something there which I want. And it's, I mean, we are, our brains are programmed, you know, to look at risk, to reduce risk and make sure that we're safe. So the basic biology of the human is, you know, take care. And I think that this is a muscle that needs to be developed. And in my work, and, you know, when you say about a culture, for me, there are three aspects of this. And the first one is my own biography. You know, so how did I grow up? How was I encouraged? How was I rewarded for thinking differently, for thinking, right, as an individual? I mean, you know, a lot of people don't like people who think, because it can lead to questioning and change and development, and not everybody wants that. So I think there's one aspect there in the biography, and I think the second one is in the culture. Is that welcomed? And slightly provocatively, is here is my experience with school systems. Well, the question is, you know, what do they do in order to allow space for thinking? Yeah. And questioning. So I think as organisations, it's highly important, if you want to develop, both in terms of people and business, is an environment where there's time and space to allow thinking. And I think one of the aspects of this is, I mean, individually, but also in organisations, you know, is the power of purpose and pictures of the future, you know, where people are realising that just because it's the way it is today, which we've worked hard for, and it's recognising and acknowledging that, but it's almost like the Darwinian theory. If we keep doing this in a world where markets are changing, you know, there's so many aspects of business which are changing, then we need to be aware of and have this desire and this almost this enjoyment in disruption. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it's, I think it's very different. I experience it from different cultures, but I see big business progress in organisations that welcome and look for disruption. This opens up thinking, opens up product development, markets, the way we're organised. But you need a culture around that, which celebrates it. Yeah.
Very, very. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just gives me a picture the way you describe it. You know, it mm-hmm. you say it like welcoming disruption. And if you put it a little bit more kind, it would be curiosity, no? A space for curiosity, for asking questions, mm-hmm. and having the time and the mm-hmm. and the looking into depth to find answers to these mm-hmm. questions.
Yeah, I think that's related to the thinking. I think strategically, disruption is about appreciating the value of this change and development. You know, if you take the example of Amazon, you know, and the effect it's had upon, you know, the high street, you know, this has disrupted buying, and it was done cleverly and strategically, and now so many people are using it. And you think about a generation now that doesn't need to try a pair of shoes on, they'll order two, try one on at home and send the other one back, you know? And thus logistics are developing in a crazy way as a result of this. And, you know, so it's a matter of, I think, is do I want to try that out? You know, no. Am I going to, you know, maybe, I think clothes is a good example. You know, to buy something over the internet, and get away from standing there, you know, trying it on in a shop. And both have advantages and disadvantages. But, well,
And it's time for some music to relax the brain. Why Don't You Do Right? Jan Hirte and me, Karola Zakotnik.
You had plenty money in 1922. You let other people make a fool of you. Why don't you do right, like some other men do? Sitting down wondering what it's all about. If you ain't got no money, they will put you out. Why don't you do right, like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. If you had prepared 20 years ago, you wouldn't be wandering now from door to door. Why don't you do right, like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too.
Back on track, and yes, we are starting with the four questions. Firstly, what is courage? How would you, John, explain courage?
Do you think, you know, I always ask four questions, and and the one is just coming now. I mean, I hear that we would need a certain courage to do that. What do you think courage, what does courage mean in nowadays business world?
I think courage, there are two sources for courage. One is fear and one is want, right? And I think that, so maybe through something, and this is why I was saying before, the desire, the want to think differently, then I think is courage is a lot easier when your leaders are involving people in processes, decisions, development, because they're getting the purpose, they understand it, they're being treated with respect as for human beings and for what they bring. And I think that in that situation, you know, courage has got such a lovely perspective, because it's something a bit lighter, a bit easier, and I know I'm heading to something that we all have agreed we want to, we've been involved in. And then I think, you know, there's the courage associated with fear. So, you know, I know, for instance, you know, maybe I'm going to change jobs. A very simple example. And I need to have that conversation, you know. And I maybe have not done it a lot. So there's a lot of anxiety and fear there because I haven't experienced it. And there, then I think there's another source, another form of courage that's needed. And that can be from within, but in a situation like that, you know, it may need some people around you, you know, who encourage you, who support you, and, you know, and help people then. This is where I think, you know, in organisations, I know we're going to come to trust in a bit, but this is the value and the importance in organisations of investing in teams, so there is this mutual support, and it makes life a lot easier for people to take these steps.
Yeah. They're describing something I call open and closed creativity, and I always say for creativity you need also a kind of courage, because you're going into the unknown and you're discovering it and exploring it. And I mean, in my book, the definition is that courage means to dare to go into the unknown and to trust, to be able to trust that you will
recognize, see, and learn enough to develop new out of that.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I don't think it's as much the unknown as the not yet experienced.
Nice.
If I take the example of the job interview, the aspect of, say, I'm going to hand in my notice, and I've not done it very much, then it's an experience that I've not had. And then once I've done it, maybe once or twice, then it's personally, emotionally, and, you know, I've got that experience. I can reflect upon it. You know, what did I do well? What would I do next time a bit differently? Then it's got this, you know, value based experience behind it. I think we very rarely, just spontaneous thinking is personally or particularly in business. You know, we're not going into the unknown. I mean, and the unknown is like going to Mars now. You know, people are planning to try and get to Mars, and there we don't know. I think a lot of the time, as I say, it's again, we come to confidence in a minute, is how reflected and aware am I based upon my experiences of the skills I've got in order to take that step.
I was actually translating not the Unbekannte, the unknown, but das Ungewisse. So, which is a big difference in German, and describes
true.
Much more what you also describing.
That's right. Yeah.
And I completely, I just agree with that, because it's true. The unknown would be Mars. It's much, very, very big, and I like to downsize it a bit, because courage is such a big word, and the unknown is so big. But the Ungewisse, and just being curious, daring to go there, but like self-understood. And this is where I just really think the confidence comes in.
Yeah, but before we go to confidence, just, I mean, I think there's another word here around courage, and that's encourage, right? I don't think that, again, it's for me, it's around the topic of culture. How much do we encourage ourselves, or do we encourage others to go and do something?
Yeah.
You know, it's this, you know, I believe you can do it. You know, I think it's great that you are, you know, thinking about it. And, you know, if you want some support and help, you know, I'll be there for you. I think it's this value around a team as well, or, you know, good friends. But it's about encouraging people as well. In order to try out and take whatever steps they want to take. Again, in business, I don't think we do it enough.
And John is an expert in leadership. He's an organizational psychologist, and he says that supporting people, teams, and organizations get the best out of themselves is his passion, his experience, and also his specialty. Curious to hear more, so stay tuned.
You know, what we're talking about, I think there's another word we need to bring in with these topics, is the role of control, right? Because a lot of people, you know, have a need to, you know, to control, not let go.
It's also a way of creating safety, no?
Absolutely, yeah. We all need it. I mean, our brain is built to make sure that we're safe. So it's the most natural thing in the world, and that's there, and that's good, right? And for me, it's an and, you know, it's around this desire, this want to, it's about, out of the want is then the courage is easier, and if I've got the right people around me in a team, then I also get the encouragement. I mean, team could be a leader, but there's this encouragement, this belief. And I think there's one point here which I'd like to throw in, it's not on the list, is the fact of reinforcing progress. Because often, you know, we ask ourselves to do something, or people ask us, and I think there's way too little personal reflection to look at and realize the progress I've made in doing what I've done in a good way, not hammering myself for what went wrong, but for those small steps, that progress, to really acknowledge that within myself, maybe get feedback. And this, I think, is what gives us more of an inner foundation, an inner security then. I think people hop from experience to experience and take too little time really to reflect on, you know, what they've done and what they've achieved. So I think that what's important, going back to the word culture, is having a culture on the one side of encouragement to do, but also a culture where the time is taken in order to reinforce that progress and acknowledge that progress.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's interesting because I was even considering to ask five questions, to start asking five questions. Mm-hmm. And the fifth would be, what role does reflection play? And I think it's crucial, actually.
Yeah. I think it's the attitude you go into reflection. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, I think, I mean, this is very black and white, and it's a question to think upon for yourself. You know, when you reflect on something, you know, what attitude do you have to yourself, and what do you look at? And you don't just look at what you've not done well, what you've not achieved, but you have a good balanced, and again, I bring the word you said before, I'm actually curious really to take a look at this, and to see, you know, what's happened, what was my contribution, what have I learned, and to really acknowledge that within myself as well.
Reflecting about yourself and acknowledging achievements, also mistakes and what you learned about it, I think this is very, very crucial in leadership. So now you have a few moments to think while you listen to Maya Yaku and Everybody Loves the Sunshine.
Everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Folks get down in the sunshine. Sunshine. Folks get brown in the sunshine.
And we're back. Yeah, the next part is about confidence and the connection between confidence, being confident, culture, and leadership. John Ireland and Carola Zakotnik at the Kultursalon. What is confidence for you, and which role does it play in successful leadership, or let's also not only focus on leadership, but this thing about creativity, culture, and leadership. I think those three are very closely linked. And confidence, what role does it play? How would you describe it also?
I think it's for individuals, it's lovely, you know. I mean, I work with so many people, and they just say, I'd like to be more confident. And if I ask them, you know, what do you do for your confidence, then they usually look at what went wrong, right? And I mean, a lovely little story. Many years ago, I was on an international leadership program, five or six modules over a couple of years, and one of the delegates came. Well, there were actually 14 delegates, and in the introduction, 11 of them said, "I'd like to be more confident." One of the women on the course, after the program, actually got confidence tattooed on her wrist to remind her of the fact that she'd become so much more confident. I think confidence is being aware of what I can and can't do and accepting it. Nobody can do everything. I think for me, confident, and if I know what I can and can't do, then I can focus on what I'm good at. It motivates me, you know, I get a buzz out of it, I get fulfillment out of it. You know, why try doing things we can't do? So find somebody that can do what I can't do, right? But I think it's about this mentality or this approach to myself, again, of really reflecting and being aware of what I actually have. And it's realising that I have a wealth of experience. And this can be within business, out of business, it can be from a childhood, it can be from school. But I'm really aware of, you know, the progress I've made and what I've done. And I think that another aspect of this confidence of knowing it is, my experience is the more confidence people have, the more humble they are, right? People often associate confidence for me is with arrogance, but arrogance is a form of insecurity. You know, there's a saying in the north of England where I come from is, you know, if you know you're good, you don't have to prove it, right? And I think there's a lot in that, right? So it's being aware of what I can do, being aware of what my contribution is, accepting and being able to say to myself, you know, I'm really excellent there. Yeah? And often people find that embarrassing, or, you know, you say to people, gosh, you know, you're really brilliant at that, it's fantastic. And the ability to take it on, but other people are brilliant at other things. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So it's an inner awareness of what I can, what I can't do, a belief in that as well. Mm-hmm.
I mean, in German, there's this confidence, which is kind of a Bewusstsein or a Selbstbewusstsein, we would say. Yeah. And I use a lot the word Zuversicht, mm-hmm. which is a very positive connotation, mm-hmm. that I trust in success, mm-hmm. I would call it. Do you have a word for that? Because when I, in my book, I'm writing it, it is confidence, but it's this positive, this Zuversicht, mm-hmm. to believe unconditionally, but not naive in success, yeah. that this what I'm doing will be successful or will complete it positively. Do I have a word for that?
I've got two words, easy. Back yourself.
It's Zuversicht, back yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's the same word, but that's what, for me, it's about. I don't think there's always this one-to-one translation.
No, yeah, it's...
But it's, you know, it's back yourself, trust yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the Zuversicht is not about yourself, actually. It's just about... sending positive vibes or living positive vibes for an outcome,
mm-hmm.
just knowing then consequently that you can trust yourself that you will, yeah. do the best to make this happen.
Yeah. I mean, you can trust yourself, but you may not be the right person for the job, right? And this is where, for me, confidence comes into this. Mm-hmm. Really, we're having and working hard so that I'm, you know, the best person for the job. I mean, my passion in sport is rugby, and you take the All Blacks, the New Zealand rugby team, and they talk about earning the jersey, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, at that moment in time, I'm the best person to pull on this jersey. But they also have a culture where people say, you're better than me.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't mean to say that I can't work harder and next time I'll be the person wearing that jersey. Right, but there's a lovely mentality within that of self-reflection and awareness that I'm really good for it. You know, so this is where I come to trust yourself, back yourself. I had a lovely situation with somebody who was doing a really, really big presentation, and it was just about, you know, you've got what you need, back yourself, trust yourself, and to realise, not just a cognitive one, but you feel it physically, and you think, excuse my language, shit, yeah, I've done this 100 times, I know it inside and out, and I can do it.
Have you ever reflected how confident you are with yourself, and are you having your back? Well, some moments of music to reflect on that. And we keep on giving you some brain food here, John Ireland and Kabbalah Zakotnik. How are you dealing with your inner critic? Let's listen what John says.
The physiology of it is, or the brain, you've always got the inner critic, you know, the risk voice. And I think when we talk about confidence, it's also bringing in the value of talking about, you know, the role of the inner critic, because I think that sadly we listen too much to this voice. You know, we're in control of it. I mean, the voice is there to protect us and to make sure that we're safe. You know, don't do that. You know, or to get us to avoid something. And that's just one side of it. And it's there as a voice which helps us maybe assess. You know, we don't go into things too quickly as a result of the voice that makes us just sort of stop and check and think of a thought of everything. But on the other side of it, you know, there's the voices around the confidence, but saying, you know, gosh, you know, you've done this 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've trained so hard for this. You've practiced so hard for it. You can do it, right? So I think it's this awareness, and a true inner awareness of where I'm good and what I can do.
And in a culture where confidence is welcome and confidence can be developed and cultivated and so on, does trust play a crucial role for you?
Yeah, I really, really love, in English we say growing confidence, right? And I think this is, you know, in the use of words, I think is beautiful. You know, because as a child, you know, what do we do to help kids grow confidence? You know, and confidence is like a small tree, you know, and with some encouragement, you know, with some experiences, with some good reflected feedback, and then, you know, confidence can grow. So I really, really like, you know, this term of growing confidence. And I think at different phases in life, you know, what's there, who's there to help you grow that. And then at some point is where you take over the job of the gardener, you know, and you're taking care of your own confidence.
Yeah. I mean, this is all, like you describe it, is exactly what I say when I talk about future skills that need to be farmed, you know, that need to be grown, that need to be cultivated, watered.
Yeah.
They need some food, and it has to be the appropriate food for this plant, for this kind of growing.
Yeah.
and then something comes out that is trust,
yeah.
and that can then help ferment or harvest or whatsoever, you know. Yeah. But it's a nice picture, this farming, because it's what you're describing is exactly what I also say. It's not done in one day. This is not. You have it today, yeah. and then you know it forever. No, you make it. You grow it every day, and you cure it, and you cultivate it every day more and more and more.
Yeah, and I think you know you're growing, growing your confidence, and you are, you know, you're walking back to the fields, i.e., your experiences, and if you need to, when you need to, is to check in and to realize that they're there.
Yeah. And it does not go bigger and bigger and bigger. It just goes on and on and on. It's more a circular thing, and it gets more stable. Yes, gives stability. Trust, such a big word. How do you grow trust? Stay tuned. Kultursalon.
Does that also grow trust?
No.
A field of trust? How do you grow trust? Because it's something that also has to be cultivated. It's not just there.
I mean, I think there's two things around trust. I think one is growing it and establishing it, and the other's maintaining it. And I think that we, and particularly in business, talk about, you know, is establishing trust. And I think it's the role of teams and leaders to actually maintain it. I think what's nice with trust is, you know, again, we all bring our own biography around trust. You know, if I've grown up in an environment where I don't know what trust is, you know. It's really tough later on to learn it. And some people have had good experiences and some people bad experiences. And there's some reflection in that. What do I need? And I think it's important in a team, in a culture, to talk about that openly, you know, in simple terms. Some people, you know, sort of give trust, but if it's taken away, it's really tough to get it back. And others grow it very, very slowly, but it's there forever, you know, a bit black and white again. But so I think it's a very, very individual thing. The value of trust is, you know, things happen quicker, you know, things are more open. And I think there's a word here which we haven't in the conversation up till now around culture, is this topic of openness and vulnerability. And this is a very personal thing, but in sport as well as in business, you know, it's been proven that, you know, where is that culture of vulnerability and openness, then the quality of teamwork is exponentially better. So I think that part of trust, of building it, maintaining it, is developing a culture of emotional security where people can talk openly and build and develop it. And again, one topic for me around this is What I find a bit sad is we talk so often around where there is not trust, right?
Yeah.
And this always, you know, gets the focus. But I also think it's important to look and see, you know, where there is trust and why there's trust there. Acknowledge that it is there, celebrate it, you know, and work with it. There's a very good example, a guy quite like Simon Sinek. Did some work with the US, the Navy SEALs. And he's got a lovely presentation on this. And the conclusion is, you know, that the SEALs would choose somebody they can trust and not necessarily the best at the job, right? So they would accept a lower skill level if the trust was there, right? And I think that speaks volumes about the, you know, the role of trust.
Yeah.
As I say, I think in business, in sport, take the business context, if there's trust and openness there, then you just get things done more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Simple.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about openness and vulnerability. When I talk about trust, it's again the thing when emotions, feelings, and thinking are connected.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the allowance to live all of that,
mm-hmm.
and an organizational culture will kind of lead to success when this culture allows to have instinct, intuition, and intelligence as a unity, you know, to be lived as a unity. So it's not only about Excel sheets and evaluations based on numbers, but it's also about what do I feel with that, what do I experience with it, what do I take out, which is actually what you say, openness and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And it's so crucial for us, no? Indeed it is. Time for some music. Maya Yaku and What's Going On.
Talk to me so you can
simply because our hair is still long. You know we got to find a way to bring some understanding here today. Pick at night and pick in signs. Don't punish me with your brutality. Talk to me so you can see
leadership and growing trust, growing confidence. Do organizations live that? John says yes. His experience is that we're making big progress here.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I mean, we're making massive progress on these topics. The organizations I work with, you know, are acknowledging the need and the value of this. I think we're getting a younger generation now coming through, I call it the emotional revolution, you know, where it's okay to talk about these topics openly. You know, I look at, as I say, in sport, if I take rugby in the UK, you know, the number of players, there's a great campaign which was developed, which was called Lift the Weight in Rugby. This was about, you know, people being able to talk openly about their emotional problems, you know, given the pressures that they're in. And, you know, these people in professional sport are under immense pressure. And I just think that it's fantastic. The way, you know, this is talked openly about. So it, you know, it, you see, or maybe from the perspective of young people, you know, they're sporting heroes. But when these conversations are in the media and interviews, you know, people are aware of, you know, there are two sides to it. And that's the reality. I think it's always been there. We've just not talked about it. Mm. And, you know, again, you know, what it does is, you know, it improves teamwork, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you talk about the reality of where you are, then you can find a fitting way forward. But if you're denying the fact that you're afraid of this game, then you're not going to have a good game. But if you can talk about it beforehand and somebody can help you through that, then the chances are you can put that to one side and get on with the game. And I think that's exactly the same in business. I imagine somebody going for to do a big presentation, whether it be a client or within the company, and if they could have somebody just to talk about how they were feeling beforehand, in order to be able to get themselves well set up and prepared, be brilliant. Yeah.
Nice. I mean, what I hear also is, on one hand, is being aware of emotions or feelings and being able to speak about it creates effectiveness, thus then resulting in efficiency also, but also creates healthier people. Means also
absolutely.
It's a very sustainable.
Absolutely.
Money saving, it's a very, very cheap way of fostering high performance.
Absolutely.
And a very human
lead. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I do anyway, get up because I want to perform.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. I've always enjoyed it. I get a lot of fulfillment out of it. I get a lot of satisfaction. I get a motivation out of it. It's brilliant. I think the topic is taking care of the costs of performance. I think this is where sport is much better, with recovery, regeneration, but we come back to culture again, you know, is that we have a culture within a team, within an organisation. You know, we talk about the costs of performance and how we can, as a, you know, a unit, as a team, you know, is how we can take care of each other. I think it's, you know, the most normal thing in the world. But it's important that it's a part of the team culture.
Yeah, and it is, like you said, the most normal thing in the world, and it's the most cost-effective thing in the world also. Yeah. I think this is somewhere this equation is not known.
I think it's known, I just don't think that people realise the value of it. I don't think...
Which I implied, we said it's not known, it's not conscience or...
I mean, it's the topic, I think, here when we're talking about this in terms of leadership, you know, how much time do leaders and organisations take and invest in these topics? You use the word sustainability, and I'm 100% with you there, is, you know, I mean, let's take an example, you know, if you're running a marathon, you're going to run 42K, you've got a start and a finish, right? So you prepare for the start, and when you get to the finish, then you take care of your regeneration, your recovery. In life, you know, we've got birth and death, right? That's the start line and that's the finish line, right? So as humans, and this is where I think it's one of the great things out of the pandemic, we actually need to learn to take care of ourselves, right? To realise I'm a priority in my life, yeah? To realise, you know, there are some days I'm good and some days I'm not so good, right? That I acknowledge when I'm tired or I'm not thinking or whatever, that's the time to take a bit of a time out, to do something about it. You know, I think these are the conversations that need to be going on in teams, you know, where we've got leaders on the one side is, you know, driven for performance, great, you know, that's it, fabulous. But also take time for these, you know, mental, emotional, physical health topics. And as I say, if we've got trust and we're doing things more quickly, you know, we'll have those chats quicker. You know, it'll be easier then, you know, we won't be looking for time, we'll have it because we're more efficient, we're more effective.
That outlook to have more time and feel better, isn't it worth giving it a try? Listen to Smile, sung by me, Karola Zakotnik. Smile, though your heart is breaking. Smile, even though it's aching. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. Smile, through your fear and sorrow. Smile, maybe tomorrow you see the sun comes shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You see, the life is still worthwhile. And we're back at the Kultursalon. The next question is listening, about listening. How important is it to be a good listener?
This all leads to the my fourth question, which for me is becoming more and more important, is listening.
Mm-hmm.
Like the importance mm-hmm. of listening for mm-hmm. For an organization who invites future skills. I mean, future mm-hmm. skills is a nice, I call it marketing word. It's something we have always had,
mm-hmm.
but the only way, you know, it's a way that will bring us to a prosperous future not only creates the outcome of this year, but thinks a bit further and thinks mm-hmm. about also how do we always create also something, a product, a service, whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
that also has an impact on a world worth living.
Mm-hmm.
I think listening has quite a big importance.
Mm-hmm.
How would you rate that, the listening part, the importance of that?
It's simple, yeah. I mean, basically when you're listening, you're leaving yourself and moving to the person that's sitting opposite from you, right? And if you don't listen, again, you'd be very provocative. If you don't listen, there's an arrogance that you have all the solutions, right?
Like, yeah.
Which
nice.
is the most impossible thing in the world. What the purpose of listening is to activate and use the ideas and experiences of others. It's about being identified, you know, with more identified for me with the purpose than, you know, looking for qualification in my own ego. Yeah, I think with listening, it's about, in this day and age, you know, the value of difference and diversity. There's a lovely book which I really like, is called Rebel Ideas. I've forgotten the author. He's a brilliant journalist. He's a really good Rebel Ideas, and you know, he talks about the power of diversity. And I was listening to a radio program, and MI5 now are employing people with autism to look at information because they have a different perspective on things, right? And that's a form of listening. It's valuing that other people have got different perspectives. And if we listen and we gather those perspectives, then, you know, we can develop something which will help us get to where we want to get to. It's the easiest thing in the world. But again, in the biography of it, you know, for me, I associate this with confidence.
Thank you, John, for this interview. Very, very big thank you. And if I ask you to sum up what are the most important skills a good leader needs, how would you put that?
So I think there's a skill here, or, you know, for leaders, I think for us all, but, you know, for leaders, is asking the good questions. You know, activating the conversation. We all listen, you know, we contribute, we see what we've got, and then we decide, if we look at the purpose of where we want to go, you know, which one fits best.
Kultursalon, Kulturnisalon, Carola Sakotniks Sendung zu Kreativität, Leadership und Kultur. Jeden vierten Dienstag im Monat auf Radio Agora. Und jeden vierten Mittwoch auf allen Podcast-Plattformen als Podcast. Ich freue mich auf ein Wiederhören beim nächsten Mal. Deine Carola Sakotnik.